you're noticing, I'm guessing, there's some balloons, right? And there's a big five up here, if you can even see that. Anybody know what's going on right now? It's our 5-year anniversary as a church. Yeah, it's so exciting. It's so exciting that I thought I was going to have my friend Antonio come up here and share his special gift with all of us. Antonio, come up here. Would you mind? Is this on? Oh, that's not going to help because I have another mic. This is on. Will you share with us?
Yes.
Thank you so much. Everyone say hi to Antonio.
Hello. Hello, hello. So I just want to wish Mosaic a very, very happy birthday. This is a really hot mic. Like this. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Mosaic. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you so much. That was amazing. Thank you very much for sharing with us. You know, I love it when people are confident in the gifts that God has given them. I'm just really thankful that He's given us so many gifted people in a lot of different areas. And sometimes there are unique gifts that you don't know where you can use them. Antonio's been back here playing the cajon for a while, which is really cool. But obviously, he has even more talents than that we want to be able to share. And how do you throw in beatboxing and worship? I don't know. Maybe we'll figure it out one day. But I was just really glad that he could share that gift with the rest of us. But yes, it is. It's our 5-year anniversary. We've been a church together, a campus together for 5 years, which is really, really cool. And I wanted to talk about that, but I want to start in a story in Matthew, okay? Now, in Matthew chapter 16, Jesus, who is the most amazing human being to ever walk the face of this earth, the most amazing, beautiful man, kind, compassionate man ever to walk the face of this earth, I wish, this would be one of my wishes, is that I could go back just for a day, because I don't know about the hygiene that was going on back then, but just for a day and just get to walk next to him and get to hear him, see the way that he expressed the epic love of God for people that were annoying and frustrating and all kind of stuff, because I want to be more like that. I really need to work on that. But so Jesus is hanging out with his disciples, okay? Jesus taught to big crowds. He taught to smaller crowds, and then he had about 12 guys that he really intentionally poured into, and he traveled most of the time with them. And so he had about a 3-year ministry where he was actively engaging in ministry, and I don't know how long this was into his ministry, but I'm guessing it was probably around two-plus years into his ministry. So he's been with these guys for a while, and they've just been in a boat, and they've crossed this big old lake that they called the Sea of Galilee. They were over on the side, which was the land of the seven. They called it the Decapolis as well. It had 10 different major cities that was there. But they called it the land of the seven because it was where all the ites hung out. The Hittites, the Amorites, the Girgashites, all the ites, they were over there. Okay, they were the people that weren't Israelites, although those were ites too. But nonetheless, they took the boat over the lake and came over to where they were in Israel. Now, I don't know which disciple was supposed to bring the provisions. I don't know whose responsibility it was, but when you're with a crew traveling around, there's things that you need. You need food, right? You need water. I don't know what else you needed back then, because I don't know, I could not have lived back then. It would have been awful. But I don't know who was in charge of that, but whoever was had forgotten to pack food. They had forgotten bread. And so Jesus makes a statement. And he makes a statement. He says, "Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees." And who knows what leaven is? Yeast. Yeah, it's yeast. And what does yeast do? It causes bread to rise. Now, we know this in our day and age. But anybody bread makers out here? Do we have any bread makers? Anyone? Okay, we don't have a lot of bread makers out here, yet you all knew what yeast was, and you knew what it was for. When you say yeast, you know bread, okay? That's a big deal. There's a big connection there between leaven and bread. But in our day and age, Multiply that by 1,000 in their day and age. There were so many things that connected leaven to bread, not just in their normal everyday lives, but also in their religion, in their worship. Okay? So when you hear leaven, what do you think? Try bread. It rhymes with bread. Okay, let's try again. When you say leaven, what do you think? Leaven. Oh, that was great. It was nice. It was like a little hip hop going on up here. No offense. So it makes sense that at this point, the guy who's supposed to bring food, who's supposed to bring bread that is forgotten is like, oh no, Mayday, I forgot to bring bread. And then, you know, disciples are like, oh no, we forgot bread. Who was supposed to do it? Was it you? No, it was me last time. I gave it to John. John was like, Peter. And so they're talking about this and they're getting frustrated with one another because they forgot to bring bread. And Jesus says, seriously? And now, in the moment, if you're just in that moment, you think, why would this be a problem? That's the most logical thing to think when someone says leaven, it's bread. It's the most logical thing to think. But the reason this was a big deal was because there's a greater context going on. Ever been caught up in a moment? And because you were so caught up in the moment, you misinterpreted the moment? You misinterpreted the feelings or the thoughts or whatever was going on in your world. You misinterpreted it because you were so caught up in the moment, you forgot the context of what was going on. And Jesus says, hey, guys, I want to remind you of something. Don't you remember? Don't you remember? Don't you remember when we fed 4,000 people miraculously over in the land of the seven? And don't you remember when we fed 5,000 people miraculously in the land of the 12 up in Galilee? And when I say we, I mean me. Don't you remember? You were there. If I can miraculously feed 5,000 people, you think I'm worried about bread? And there's so much going on here, but the thing that I think is so important is this word remember. So I want us to do this. Go back to John chapter 6. John chapter 6. I think that's right. Yeah, we're going to start in verse 1. John chapter 6, verse 1. And we're going to look at the context of what's going on there. Page 987 in this Bible, if that's what you've got. John chapter 6. This story is recounted in all four Gospels, but there are some unique details in John that I want to bring out. Chapter 6, verse 1, it says, after this, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. And a large crowd was following him because they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick. He was healing sick people. He was casting out demons. It was a big deal. So a whole bunch of people are following him. It says, Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat down with his disciples. Now the Passover feast of the Jews was at hand. And lifting up his eyes then and seeing a large crowd was coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat? And he said this to test him, for he himself, Jesus, knew what he was going to do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread would not be enough for each of them to get a little bit. Now, a denarii is about a day's wage. Okay, so 200 denarii, a day's wage, give or take. You know, he's talking almost a year's worth of wages. Wouldn't be enough to give a little bit to everybody. What are you talking about, Jesus? Now, I imagine that we have some Phillips in here, okay? Right, you begin to think about the details. Already, you're kind of calculating, you're thinking through, okay, wait, so we got one, carry the denominator, add the, yeah, and you're like, there's no way. It would be impossible. We can't feed this number of people. Even if we had the money to do it, we couldn't do it, Jesus. But Jesus knew what he was going to do. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there's a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what are they for so many? Now, I imagine at this point, some people were aware of a green light thinking session and some people weren't. Okay, green light thinking sessions where you can throw out any idea and no idea is a bad idea. But you've been in those sessions before where someone doesn't get it and someone throws out a green light idea and someone dumps on it. You know what I mean? I'm guessing at this point the disciples are holding their tongue because Philip just said, we can't feed them with 200 denarii worth of bread. And then Andrew's like, but we got a guy with a few loaves and some fish. Andrew, why did we bring him along? You know, just sort of whack him on the head, right? What's going on? Besides, you're going to steal a little boy's food? Andrew, twice, whack him on the head. Seriously, come on now. Andrew. And Jesus said, have the people sit down. I don't know what the disciples were thinking at this point. All we've got, we've gathered it together. We've got five loaves of bread. It's from Walmart. They didn't have Walmart back then, okay? Bread is much cheaper now. This does not cost me a denarii, okay? They had five of these. And there were 5,000, and we find out in other accounts, 5,000 just guys. So men, women, and children, it's likely it was upwards of 10,000 people there. Five of these and a couple fish, right? A couple mahi-mahi. I don't know what you catch. There wasn't salt life back then, but there were some fish that they had. And here's the deal, okay? Jesus said, all right, we got this. Have them sit down like they're about to eat a meal. What if you're a disciple, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? You're like, oh, okay. And so here's what happens next. He says, now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down, about 5,000 in number. Then Jesus took the loaves, the five loaves, okay? He took the five loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated. So also the fish, as much as they wanted. Now, this a lot of time passes by in this moment. Okay, that's just a quick sentence, but a lot of time passes by in this moment. Jesus basically is handing out some loaves to, gets his disciples. He's like, all right, Peter, come here. Because Peter's usually the first one to volunteer. Hey, I want you to take this to the first group of 50 and 100 and hand this out. And if you're Peter, you know we only have five loaves. And you've got three of them. And you're about to hand it out to 50. What do you do? Hey, just take a little. Just take a bite. You don't know what Jesus is going to do. You don't know what's about to happen. He's never done this before. This is brand new. I don't know. I don't know what he does. Or if Peter's really hungry, he's like, I'm going to take some first. Who knows? But then he comes back and, well, goodness sakes, there's some more bread. He goes and hands out more. He comes back, and there's more bread. And he goes back, and there's more fish. And he goes back, and they continue to feed over 5,000, upwards of 10,000 people with bread and fish, that they only had five loaves and a couple fish. Crazy. And we look back at it. Most of us have heard this story. We get it. We think, that's amazing. That's brilliant. Unbelievable. But I am interested in how the disciples were reacting in the moment. Because moments can be so deceptive when you don't know the wider context. A moment. I get caught up in these. I get caught up in these. And what I have realized is that a moment in my life with my hopes, dreams, worries, fears, all that's going on in me right now, it's just like one word, which is a part of a bigger sentence, which is a part of a paragraph, which is on a page, in a chapter, in a gigantic story. And when I know the story, and when I know the chapter, and I know the paragraph, and I know the sentence, it really gives meaning to that word. Brings light to it, brings life to it. But I get caught up in the here, now, and the me. And what I wanted to do is I wanted us to take some time to remember. In the Bible, remembering is a big deal. The Hebrew word that's used for remember is used over 270 times in the Old Testament. In fact, over 40 times, the Israelites are commanded to remember specific things. God is always saying to them, remember! Remember how I brought you out of Egypt. Remember how you were slaves in Egypt. Remember your forefathers. Remember the commandments. Remember the Sabbath. Keep it holy. Remember, remember, remember. Because God knows us human beings that we forget. And we caught up in the moment. And the moment doesn't make sense when it's not in light of the whole. You see, we can be having great despair, great difficulty, great frustration, great hurt, great pain, and we can forget that God is epically good because we don't remember. We don't remember what he's done in our life. We don't remember what he's done in the lives of the community, in the lives of the history of the church. We forget. And so God says, remember. Back in the time of Abraham, what they would do is they would build altars. And a lot of times people would build altars, and we think of that in kind of a worship way, where you sacrifice some sort of animal on the altar, and that happened. But there was another altar that they would build, is anytime something gigantic would happen, anytime something big would happen in the life of Abraham, we see that he would build an altar. And the reason he would build an altar is because he wanted a physical reminder in a specific spot, so when he walked by that place again, he would remember, oh my, God showed up in extraordinary ways here. It's brilliant. It's unbelievable. So even though I'm fretting right now, even though I'm worried about provision, even though I'm worried about what's going to happen, I can remember God showed up. He was amazing, magnificent, majestic. His provision was epic. And so many, many times people would build an altar. Another thing that God did is he set up feasts. There were seven major feasts in the Old Testament, and then they added an eighth one right after the Old Testament. Anybody know what that one is? Hanukkah, yes. Yeah, the Festival of Lights. So there's eight now, but there were seven major ones then. And of the seven, five of them were for the nation of Israel to remember a significant event in their history. And you had the Feast of Passover, the Feast of Pentecost, the Feast of Booths, the Feast of the Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. I mean, you just had all these days that were there specifically for the nation to remember that God had brought them from Egypt, that they for 40 years were in the desert dwelling in tents, on and on and on, because God wanted the people, his people, to remember who they were, that they were slaves, that they were nobody, they were not even a people. And yet God lovingly, graciously had mercy on them, made them a people, set them free from slavery, gave them his law, his word, gave them his presence in the temple. He wanted them to remember because he knew that they would forget. Remembering is so important. And so on this 5-year anniversary of this specific church campus, I wanted us to remember. I'm imagining some of you are brand new. Maybe it's your first time tonight, and you're thinking, man, what is Mosaic? Maybe it felt really friendly walking in. You know, maybe someone gave you a bag or a cup, or who knows. First time, you get that. So if you haven't, on the way out, make sure you snag that. I'm kind of wondering what's going on. Maybe you've been here for a while, and you really don't know the story of Mosaic at Walt Disney World. Maybe you've been here for 5 years. There are a few of you left. But I want to recount the story. And as I do this, I was thinking about this, and I was reminded that I don't know when the story started. I just know when I got invited into the story. My wife and I, we were living in Branson, Missouri, middle of nowhere, hillbilly Missouri. It was great. Not everybody had all their teeth. That's all right. We lived there, and we were at the time musicians. We really believed that we were called at the time to form a band, record some music, trick people into buying CDs, and we had a blast. It was a lot of fun. Now, not all of it was great. It wasn't fun sleeping in our car when we ever had to do that, but we had fun traveling around the country and seeing all that God was doing in unique places. It was really fun. Brought our little dog, and she would be under the merch table in her little cage, and it was great. She made it feel like home. And then one day, and Jennifer reminded me the other day that it was on September 11th, 2009, she came to me. I was in my office, it was a musician. I don't know. I was in a room. And so she was like, hey, I really want to work for Disney. Now, at this point, there's some history that is needed, okay? When I met Jennifer, she had just done this thing where she was in college, but she had this opportunity where she did this internship with this theme park in Florida called Disney, which is it's a pretty big theme park. They have lots of movies, and I thought that was really cool. Get some great work experience. It's a good thing for your resume. I heard Disney was a pretty good company, and so that was great. And at some point while we were dating, she mentioned that she loved Disney, and I thought, oh, that's awesome. I love Disney too. I grew up, you know, Little Mermaid. Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat? I just thought, you know, and if I could marry you, my collection would be complete. You know, I mean, okay. So I love Disney too. I thought. You see, I was wrong. I thought that when she said she loved Disney, that meant someday when we decided to have kids, that when we were thinking about a vacation spot, that Disney might be an option. It'd be one of the options that we may choose to go on a vacation there at some point. I was wrong. And so a couple years into our marriage, we were doing the musician thing, and I loved it. It was fun. She did all the things that I didn't like to do, like booking events and stuff, and that was great. And so I just did the things I really enjoyed. And so when she said, I want to work at Disney, I thought, you want to go work at a theme park? We have a theme park in our backyard, basically, in Branson, Missouri. It's the best theme park in the Midwest, Silver Dollar City. In fact, there have been years when it has won theme park of the year. I don't think Disney's in the category, but nonetheless, I was thinking, if you want to work for a theme park, you weren't there. What do you mean? And so I said, the only thing that I could think of at the time is, why don't you take a month and pray about it? My wife will admit that back in the day, she wasn't much of a prayer. And so a month of prayer, I thought that would really, either she would quit or God would show her that this was really not a good idea. I mean, why would we move all the way to Disney? I mean, to work at a theme park? I don't get it. And so I decided I would pray about it too all month long, because I wanted, if she came to me a month later and said, no, I believe we're supposed to come to Disney, I wanted to make sure that I could say, no, I prayed too, and we're not supposed to go. So a month later, October 11th, she comes to me and she says, okay, last day, I'm going to go down to the, there was this little path that led down to a little creek, and she was going to go pray and journal. I was like, great, wonderful. And then she came back and she said, I think we need to go to Disney. And I'd been praying about it too, and I was on board. I didn't get it, but I was okay with leaving. That's where God had gotten my heart. I was okay to leave. And so I looked at her, and I was a little confused, because she wasn't happy. She kind of, I don't know, not necessarily sad, but just bummed. It was a bummed look. And I thought, God has shown us that we need to go do what you want to do, and you're bummed? I don't get it. And so I said, what's wrong? Why aren't you happy? And she said, I don't know, I thought he'd put like a Mickey in the clouds. Disney people think in a unique way. They think with pixie dust. And so I said, I mean, the logical thing that you say is, did you ask him? Did you look? And she said, no. I said, well, why don't you go ask him and look? And so she did. And she came back with the biggest Mickey grin on her face. And she said, there was a Mickey in the clouds. Now, I know, and she knows, that you can see anything you want in the clouds when they're the right type of clouds. You know, those big old cumulonimbus clouds, right? I mean, you can just kind of see what's going on. You can see different pictures in there. But we also know that our God cares about our desires. And sometimes there are parking spots because someone was just leaving, and that's just the natural course of life. But sometimes there's a parking spot because God provided it. And I don't know which is which. And sometimes you see a Mickey in the clouds because you want to, and sometimes it's because God provided it, because he cares about us. He loves us. He's a good, loving Father. And so we choose to believe that God helped Jen see a Mickey in the clouds and took that as a good confirmation that we need to go to Disney. So I said, all right, I don't want to live in Florida. Let's go to California. And so we did. So we moved to California. And in California, there was just such unique experiences. One of the things that was so beautiful about California is we discovered what community is supposed to be like. We'd never really been a part of a community that was actually community, where people were together, loving and caring about one another, doing life together. And we decided on the way, we had just watched the Jim Carrey movie, Yes Man, and we had been no people. We decided we were going to be yes people. So when we went to California, we said yes to everything. And we had so much fun with our community, developed really close friendships. But California was also very hard because we went and Jen didn't even have a job. I didn't have a job. She didn't have a job. And she went to the casting office twice a week. Is that right? Twice a week? Twice a week, every single week for a month. And got turned down every single time. And that was really hard. You need to ask her the stories sometime. But one day, a guy said, "You know what? I think we can place you in a job at Disney." And she was so excited. And it was to sell corn dogs. And what God had done over that month was just put her heart in the place where selling corn dogs was going to be the most magical experience for her and every guest that came through her line. And if you've never heard the stories of Corn Dog Jennifer, you need to hear them because they're worth listening to. And so that was really cool for Jen, you know, from going from no job to having a job at Disney on the parks, in the parks. It was huge for her. And so during that time, though, for me, is I had just for the last 10 years done the job of my dreams. I got to be a musician. I got to travel around. I got to, sing to people and tell them what God was doing in my heart, you know, through the songs, which was such a big deal to me. And then in California, it was the strangest thing. I call it a spiritual barrier. I don't know what it was. But I could no longer pursue music. There was something in the way. I couldn't do it. Couldn't do it anymore. I don't know why. Didn't know why. And so after about a month of that, I thought, okay, I need to rethink this. So I just started praying, had some great conversation with some godly men in my life, and began to realize that God was changing the direction that He had for me. That He was putting a call on my life. And I realized that the reason I did music was not to create art. There's some people out there that are brilliant, that are creating art. Antonio creates art, okay? I wasn't creating art. For me, I had a message on my heart that I always wanted to share, and that's what I did through writing songs. So whenever I was playing in a coffee shop and no one listened, I hated it. Some people just loved the music, just loved doing it, and it was great. Me, unless people were listening to me, I hated it because I had something to share with people. And through some great conversations, thinking about, I had gone to seminary, 10 years earlier. Maybe God is calling me to be a pastor. And it just had confirmation after confirmation and realized, okay, this is it, man. I'm called to be a pastor. And so I started applying for pastor jobs. Now, apparently they want you to have some sort of experience. I didn't have any of that. And so I didn't get any of those pastor jobs. And then I applied for basically any job that was at a church, in the region there where we were living. And I didn't get any of those, which was hard because I've been doing ministry basically my whole life. My parents are in ministry. I've done ministry. And so that was really hard. And so I started applying for some internships. I was 31 years old, and I started applying for some internships. That was hard for me to begin doing that. But I did, and I didn't get any of those. And then I applied for one last unpaid internship at our church that we loved, this gigantic church in Orange County. It was a great church, Rock Harbor. And I went in for a group interview and nailed it. It was so, I just nailed it. You know, the jokes were on, just hitting. Everything was working. It was just perfect. And then I didn't get that job. And I can't tell you, I can't even remember it. What was in my heart at that moment, the devastation, the defeat, the hurt, just waves of humility that were just dosed on me. Not that I had, that I was just being humble. It was like, no, you need to be humble. I need to take you down a peg or two. And it was one of the hardest times of my entire life. It was so hard, 31 years old. And I was thinking, you don't want my time for free. I couldn't even donate my time to a church. That's bad. No, we don't want you to volunteer. No. It was hard. I remember, actually, I wrote a blog that day. I just reread it the other day. And I talked about this idea of altars. And I said, you know what? It's so hard right now. I'm so hurting right now. But I'm going to build an altar. Because I know that God is doing something incredible right now today that I have no clue what it is, but I know one day I'm going to look back and I'm going to see what he was doing and I'm going to praise his name. I tell you what, I got choked up reading it this week because I see so much of what God has done in that moment. See, God didn't want me in California. He didn't want me at Disneyland. He didn't want us at Disneyland. He wanted us at Disney World in Florida. And he had to rip all that from me. And it was about that time that Jen had gotten this amazing opportunity to do the job of her dreams here in Florida. And I remember she called and said, I got it. And I had just, you know, gotten that news. And I said, let's go to Florida. I'm ready. Let's go do it. And so we did. And we came here, and then there was some more heartache after heartache, me trying to find jobs and couldn't get any jobs, and I was applying for everything. It was really hard. And then finally, there's a church called Mosaic. We went to 7 different churches in 2 weeks because I didn't want a church shop. I was like, we've got to get involved in a community. We've got to have community. We figured out in California, community is huge. We've got to do that. So we got involved with Mosaic. A couple weeks into that, we got to have a meeting with their lead pastor, Renaud, who you guys got to hear a couple weeks ago. He's amazing. But his calendar is so full. It's packed. The fact that we got a meeting 2 weeks in is crazy. There must have been a cancellation or something. And then we got to hear, sitting over coffee with Renaud, him talking about this vision that he had for the church to train up and raise up leaders. Which I was like, me, I need to be trained up. I need to be raised up, me. And that they also had a heart for Disney cast members. I thought, you, Jen, you're one of those. You're one of those Disney cast members. And he said, you know what, actually, this can't be coincidence. We've really been praying for a guy and a girl, for a husband and wife, a team of people that are called to be a pastor and love Disney, love Disney cast members. Because we want to plan a campus one day for Disney cast members. And it was crazy. And we were like, sign us up. Now, you know, there was a long process that happened after that. But at that point, I got offered residency with Mosaic. $500 a month at Mosaic. And I tell you what, I was so incredibly grateful to get to be paid $500 a month to serve at a church. I can't even express it because God had gotten me to the point where anything was just icing on the cake for me because he needed me to be at that point before he was willing to use me in that way. And so what we did is we started this group. Back then, we called them life groups. It was just a community group, just a Bible study group. We got together, and we had no idea what we were doing. There's this great game called Solarium. It's like 50 pictures, and the pictures are amazing. And it's a great conversation starter. We didn't know what to do, so we played that for like 5 weeks in a row. Just played Solarium again and again. And Emily's laughing over here because she knows. She's like, come on, we need to do something different. And we just had fun. In fact, the other day we were watching, I was gone from group one time. And so they instead of having a Bible study, they made a video to Friday. Friday, getting down on Friday. Remember that one? It's epic, epic song. Incredible. And so they made a video to that, which was great. You'll have to look it up. I think it's on Jen's Facebook page. And we have no idea what we're doing. But we started a group, and the group was only Oakland Mosaic people. But over the course of a year, it began to change. And there more and more Disney cast members began to come to our group, which was really cool. And we kept having fun and building relationships, and it began growing and growing, and less Oakland people, more and more Disney people. And we thought, maybe there's something to this. Maybe God is doing something. And we began to pray more and more about it and began to have more and more conversations with Renaud and Mosaic and really felt like this community needs a church. We need a church. And so we decided to plant a church and finally we're just like, I don't know, let's just have one at our house. What else are we going to do? What are we waiting for? So we did. We had the first gathering at our house. And it was so cool. There were 50, like two people there, and it was too big for our house. And we thought, oh no, what are we going to do? I don't know. And so we found this clubhouse in Summerport, and we began meeting there every week, and it was crazy. We had no idea what we were doing. We tried so many things, and they didn't work, but the great thing about Disney is that cast members continue to come in over and over, so we had probably 20 new people every time, and we had only, 50 people coming. So a vast majority was brand new people, so which meant that they wouldn't stay. They would come and then they would leave because it was no good. But new people would come. So we felt okay. We felt okay about ourselves because we stayed the same size. We just kept having a ton of new people every single time. It was great. It was so fun. We got to meet people every single week. And we tried to do small groups and that didn't work. And so we forgot that and we said, let's do community. Let's build community. It's the one thing that we learned in California. God really taught us community. So we really tried to do community. I think that's one thing that we do pretty well here. Now, we're not perfect at it. Now, every single one of you has probably been hurt and burned by community here at one point or another. But God has really begun to develop a unique community here. And we slowly saw this church grow. And here's the unique thing about it, is when we were having conversations with people about planting this campus, we actually went up to a big church, a really big church in our nation, and got a lot of advice from them. And we asked them about planting this campus. And what they said was, don't do it. It'll never work. It'll never work. You'll never have, the consistency of people coming to your church. You'll never have the people that will actually pay for the church. You'll always be in the red, right? It will always be a ministry of your church. It will never take care of itself. And so we planted it anyways. And it's amazing what God has done. And I look around at all the different people. Man, those drones. The funny thing is, this is the first time I've gotten to teach in like 3 weeks, and no one had any problems except me. It's just me. You want to use the handheld? Are we okay? Do we get it? Yeah, that's what I was thinking. And it's just been really neat to see all the unique stories that have happened. At one point, we decided to come to the Holiday Inn, and we just had this room is two rooms. It's actually four, but there's two of them together that we're in right now. And we started in just one of those, and it continued to grow for some strange reason, because God was doing amazing things. And it's been really neat to see over the last 5 years what God has done, all the different people that He has impacted. You're sitting in a room, maybe there's 150 people there, I don't know, but there have probably been 4,000 people that have called this church home in the last 5 years, and that's not to talk numbers, I don't care about numbers, I really don't, but just so that you can see, you're part of something bigger than yourself. People come and go like crazy here. I mean, you know, probably half of you are have 1 foot out the door. Maybe you've got 6 months left, I don't know. It's a unique group of people. It's a unique time that God brings people here. But I've seen God do mighty, miraculous things in the span of 6 months, in the span of a year. I've seen Him radically change lives. People that were headed 100% away from God now are passionate about God. And not only are they passionate about God, they are now discipling others into intimacy with God, which is so cool. We've learned how to disciple people. No, we're not perfect at it. We're still learning, but we've realized that discipleship is so important, and God has taught us how to do that, and we're doing that through a thing that we call D groups, through a ministry that we partner with Crew, and a ministry they do, PIBS. We're beginning to disciple people, which is so fun to see. As I look back at this story, one thing that I realize is it's not my story. The writer of Hebrews, it's a book in the New Testament, it's a letter that was written to the churches. The writer of Hebrews in chapter 11 goes through and talks about the great hall of faith. It's all these great men and women who had epic faith and did amazing things for the glory of God. And he just talks about them over and over and over. And when he gets to the end of the list, right, he says, man, time's going to fail me if I talk about everybody. If I talk about David and Samuel and Jephthah and Deborah and Talk about all the great people that God used, all the great men and women of faith. I don't have time to do it. And I begin to feel this same way because it's not my story. And I know that time would fail me if I told the stories about Corndog Jennifer, if I told all the stories about Carrie Waters, Amanda Wright, Emily Mills, Caleb, Danny, if I talked about Kay Smitty, if I talked about all the people that God has impacted in this place, not because of me, but because of him. Well, I have to just continue to go on for hours and hours because God has done some amazing things in spite of me. I've realized that it's not my story. You see, so often I can look at my story, even in the big picture, not just the word, not the sentence, the paragraph, the entire story. But what I've realized is that my entire story is just one word in a sentence, in a paragraph, on a page, in a chapter, in a huge story spanning the length of history, the most epic story ever written. It's a story of how there's an amazing, loving God who cares so much about humanity that he goes to every extent imaginable to rescue them from themselves so that they can be invited into his family. It's a story of God dying so that we might have life eternally. It's a story of the gospel that he has invited us into. I realized something unique. There's a great story going on. It's not my story, but I've been invited to be a part of it. And each and every single one of us is unique. We're all different. We have different personalities. We all have different gifts and talents. I don't know what you think about me. If you're brand new, or if you've been here for a while, what you think about my gifts and my talents? I get the opportunity to teach here almost every week. But I want to be very clear. Jesus is doing a miracle here, and I'm just handing out bread. And I've been invited, and so many of us have been invited, and I'm inviting all of us to come alongside me and hand out bread with me. That's what we're doing. Jesus is doing an incredible miracle, and we're just handing out bread. And I don't know if this is true or not, but I had this thought impressed upon me. I really believe that of all the things that we've talked about, all the things that you've been a part of, all the things that you've seen so far in the last 5 years, we're on the first basketful. It's just the tip of the gigantic iceberg of the incredible miracle that Jesus is performing in our midst. And we have no idea. We'll probably never see the end of it. It will probably continue on after we die, what all he is doing, not just here at Disney World, but as people go to wherever it is that God has called them and called them back into, and they bring all the things that God has shown them here, revealed to them there, impressed upon them here, the ways that he has radically changed their lives, it's spreading out all over the world. And what I want to do is I want to invite you into the story, invite you to hand out bread with me. That's what we're doing. We're just handing out bread. You know, I thought that we were coming to Disney for my wife. I didn't realize that we were coming for a reason that was much different than that. I didn't know that we were coming for cast members because God cares deeply about cast members, for people from Universal, for people who work around cast members. I didn't know that that's why we were coming, but it is why we came. I didn't know it at the time. I do now. I don't know why you think you're here, but I can tell you why I think you're here. I think you're here because each and every single one of you has a unique opportunity to shine the love of Jesus in ways that no one else can in the place that you work, and that you, wherever you work, in your break rooms, in the cafeteria, on set, you can start a revolution by sharing the amazing, miraculous love of God that he has instilled in you, by pouring it out to other people. I've seen it. There are stories of people that I could tell for forever who have radically changed their break rooms, their cafeterias, the places that they work on set, because they've gone to work with a different perspective, realizing I'm not here to pursue my dreams. I'm not here to escape my past. I'm not here to fulfill whatever it is that I've come to desire. I'm here for a greater, bigger purpose. It's not about one word in a sentence. It's about an entire story that I'm a part of, where God is changing the world. God is changing a company. And God is using this place to change the world. And so what I want to do is invite you into the story. Join the story and come hand out bread with me. I want to do something, and it may be cheesy. But I'm going to do it anyway. Let's start with one volunteer. This volunteer is going to have a speaking part. Who wants to come up here and have a speaking part? I see a hand in the back. Come here. Come on. Come on. And then after that, get ready, because I'm going to need some more volunteers. This is the only one that has a speaking part. Hello, how are you doing? Come on up here. What's your name?
Brittany,
you're going to play the role of Philip, okay?
Okay.
And here's your line. Brady, it'll never work.
Brady, it will never work.
You might be right. Here's what we're going to do. I need, I don't know, 10 other people to come up here. And what I've got is I've got 150 loaves of bread that I went and got with Evan. And the looks that we got and the comments people made were priceless. And it's great. But every single one of you is going to get a walk home with a loaf of bread. I was just going to pass out pieces of bread, but I thought that would just be wasting food. See, with a loaf of bread in a package, you guys can actually use that. You can eat it. You can give it away. You can, give it to some people that don't have bread. That would be great. But there's bread right over there. So just grab handfuls and just start passing it out to people so that everyone gets a loaf of bread. Here, you can pass out that one. Thank you so much for your help. And if, Jared, would you guys come back up here and begin playing, and we'll start worshiping God.